the wheel weaves as the wheel wills. And in this particular occasion, the Weave has decided that the Pattern is going to throw out a new podcast focused on the new Amazon series, The Wheel of Time. And this is The Dragon Reviewed. My name is Cam Clark, and I am here with the Malones, Christine and Kyle. Hello.
How's it going?
We are going to be reviewing each and every episode of season one, at least, of The Wheel of Time, and see where we go after that and how these guys enjoy it going forward. We'll talk a little bit about how we're going to do this and our spoiler policy in just a few moments. But this will be the Wheel of Time podcast for the Genreverse Podcast Network, powered by LRMonline.com, which is... Kev, why don't you tell us a little bit more about the Genreverse Network?
Sure. Guys, so Genreverse Podcast Network, if this is your first time ever listening to us because you are just, you know, fan of Wheel of Time and found us that way, we cover everything. We have a daily show called the Daily Cup of Genre. It covers everything in geek and entertainment news. And, of course, we have a Star Wars podcast, the Cantina Animeversal Reviews, actually went up today. We did the first 7 episodes of Miracle-chan, a horror slice of life that's really really cool. Breaking Geek Radio. The point is, guys, there's something for everyone, including a long form Breaking Geek that does, you know, like I said, long form on everything, and then the short one. LRMonline.com, genreverse.com, podcast landing pages coming soon, and of course the YouTube channel and the podcast networks wherever you get them for free. No extra money, no Patreon. We live off your guys' beautiful clicks and ad revenue. So yeah, help us out with that. Hit subscribe and follow. Cam,
thanks very much, Kyle. So let's kind of set the stage out for what we are going to do and what kind of podcast this is going to be, guys, in terms of a spoiler policy. Okay, I have read all the Wheel of Time books, and dear I God. Am a fan of the series. I had not. Read them until this show was announced. So once this show was announced, I decided I need to get ahead of this because I'm a big fantasy fan, and I powered through them over the last sort of year or so. But I managed to get the last 5 books done in under 3 weeks, I think.
Jesus Christ.
So that tells you I am a fan, especially as of how the story progresses going forward, more than I was possibly at the start. Christine and Kyle, you have never read any of the Wheel of Time books. In fact, Kyle, you're not much of a fantasy guy, are you, really?
It's weird because my favorite, you know, game series, including 4 giant tattoos on my legs, is Final Fantasy. No,
yeah,
fantasy is really hard to get into, and it's got to hit certain notes for me. There's got to be a good balance between the world building, but I can't have too much. Like, I don't need all 10,000 years of your history in the first book. You could spread that out a bit. But there are a lot of really great fantasy tropes and things that come from the genre, and I mean that in a good way, that I do love. And especially when it's blended with something, whether that's science fiction, like in a Star Wars setting, or a horror, whenever you can add something to it, the action, adventure, fantasy, I'm definitely more into that. And this kind of seems, at least for the show, like it's adding a little bit more of the action into it. And the first 3 episodes did a decent job of doing the world building. So, yeah. Oh,
I mean, when I read this story, I thought, I wonder if you would like this if you gave it the chance to get to some of the meatier content later on. However, Christine, you do like fantasy a little bit more than Kyle, but you've not read the Wheel of Time books so far, haven't you?
No. I'll admit I'm not a strong reader, so I rely more on like TV series and movies, because, you know, books can take a while, and I end up getting a book, reading halfway through, and then, you know, not touching it again. I'm like, oh, let me start over. And then it's really hard for me, but I do love fantasy.
Yeah.
And this, you know, this definitely caught my eye, and I wanted it to be like, I don't want to know anything until time to watch. So I haven't been digging at anything. I've just seen trailers and left it fresh. So it's nice.
And that kind of leads us on to how we are going to cover spoilers here, because we're not, ultimately, we will be covering what episode we're covering. So full spoilers for the episode that we're covering, talking about everything that happened in that episode. Mm-hmm. And we will be going over theories, not my theories, for obvious reasons, because I know the end.
We're going to see how good Cam's poker face is when we start giving our theories.
eventually it gets further along, you know, because to begin with it's going to be easy, but later on I'm going to be like, wish I could say something there. Because I think it is a story that isn't immediate to work, you know. You don't, when I read that first book, I thought, I don't know how they're going to do 14 out of this, really. But then I realised, actually, you know, there is a lot more story here going on than what maybe is first presented up front. So, yeah, full spoilers for the episode we're covering, but we will not be spoiling aspects of the book that I'm aware of as a book reader going forward. What I will do is possibly talk about some of the changes as they come along in episodes. Well, they didn't do that in the books. You know, that could have an effect further down the line, but I'll always do it with a way that I'm not spoiling people about, especially you two, about what's coming up in the actual story itself. So we've got three episodes to cover this week, obviously, because there was a three episode drop. So episode 1, 2, and 3 of season 1. It is going to be 8 episodes long. So we'll be running this for obviously another 5 weeks after this. Start off with, let's go with Christine first. What did you think of the first three episodes, Christine?
For me, it's like when I start with something new that's fantasy, it's hard to catch on, like, you know, get all the little details. But it was really interesting. I had, you know, of course, I'm watching it, I'm like, okay, what's this mean? What's this? And, you know, so, but it was really interesting. There's, you know, of course, some elements where, you know, it felt like other, you know, like fantasy type tropes. But, you know, it did feel very different. So it was, I really enjoyed it. I don't know how deep you want me to describe how I feel.
However you want to, really, I suppose, is up to yourself. I suppose how much you want to go into it or not.
Okay. I noticed, like, in the very first episode, they put a lot of emphasis on Rand, and I'm kind of wondering why. So it's like there's certain things where it's
sort
like I have so many questions.
Main sort of, well, I suppose 7 characters that we really concentrate on within those first three episodes, if we include Lan and Moraine, who came in from the start. But you think the kind of emphasis was put on Rand more out of those characters, or just the new characters, the young characters?
Rand and Egwene, and you know, so it's kind of like I'm wondering what all that is about, especially Rand. I felt like there was more of him, and then it's like wondering, you know, what, you know, still wondering, like, what's going on with the story. Rosamund's character is Moraine.
And
wondering, like, you know, what's her deal? I know that they're looking for something, but it's like, what are you gonna do exactly? So, you know, it's I'm curious to find out more. But yeah, it's like still trying to, like, follow along and make sure that I have everything filed away into my brain just right. So,
I mean, the thing is, whenever you start off with a new sort of franchise, you know, you're not going to know everything right away. You know, you're not going to go into it and understand that world after 2 or 3 episodes, because then the first 2 or 3 episodes would just be complete exposition dumps. You know, it would just be, so this is the story so far, 20 minutes later we'll actually start the story, kind of thing. And the books aren't really written like that either. You know, they're not, in terms of, you don't fully understand the story until they want you to understand parts of the story later on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's good that they don't use just random magic tomes or rocks to spit exposition like the technology did in the Amazing Spider-Man films every 5 freaking minutes. But yeah, anyways, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's like questions of like the small culture group, like I had, like, trying to figure that out, and then also like the big picture, you know. So I'm curious on where everything's gonna go.
So there's probably a couple of things we can talk about the world without kind of getting into any spoilers or anything, in terms of kind of how it works a little bit. There's definitely some sort of changes they made to the show from the books, more so on that first episode, which I'll talk a little bit more about when it's my turn to have a go. But what about you, Kyle? What did you think so far?
Believe it or not, I was pretty stoked about it from the get go. It does have a bit of a slow start, but not awfully slow. Like, I wasn't bored out of my mind. And by about 30 minutes in, once Moraine shows up to the village and night falls, things really pick up. I'm invested in the characters. I've found the writing to be competent, delivery from the actors and actresses to be competent. The actual like filming and location filming is great. I looked it up. Some stuff in like Croatia, which is one of the most gorgeous places on Earth. If people have never looked up Croatia, like, look it up. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, because you had some theories about it being like, is this California?
Because right, I saw certain things that reminded me of the Sierra Nevadas, the walled city on the lake being right at the foot of the hills. I was like, is that supposed to be Tahoe? And because there are the idea is that this world of ours is constantly in this cycle, and this is the only thing Cam had told me about the series. You know, the world's in this constant cycle. You're coming on in the middle of it, and in one way, you know, our time right now is possibly a future, but also possibly a past, or it's a different past. And so, so just that idea, I of course was like, okay, could we potentially see something? Because Cam talked about a few thousand years. Geologically speaking, it takes millions of years to affect massive change. And then there was like the broken rock that I thought may have been like El Capitan from Yosemite, but that's not the case. And that's fine. They didn't film it there, but it was weird how my eye could catch things just from geography.
Yeah.
The characters are great. Rand is definitely interesting. I like how I think they purposefully show a little bit of more of him here in the beginning. I'm not sure, but at first when you see the red eye guy visiting his dreams, you're like, oh, is he gonna be not? All of them get it. So I like that there's a mystery. I like that there's these factions, and we're just getting to know a bit. At a time we meet the Aes Sedai, and you're like, oh, fuck them bitches, they're all awful. And you're like, okay, well, some of them are awful, and they're awful for specific reasons. And then you meet the white cloaks. Is that what it is?
That's correct. Yeah, the guys that are all in the white uniforms. Yep.
You meet them, and it's kind of like Catholics versus Protestants. They're
both
there for the light, but you know, how dare you pray to the Virgin Mary? That's an idol. Well, how dare you not pray to? So the white cloaks didn't like that. I like all of that, and I like how they're divvying it out in good edible chunks. So I'm invested at this point. The graphics. The effects, all the practical effects are great. The CGI does suffer a bit. Amazon, you guys need to talk to the people that hold the keys to the volume, because when she's got the wind and light going around her there, you can easily tell where the strobe lights are at and where CGI is not putting light where it should be. But
that,
yeah,
you know. Although that wouldn't work for the sweeping location shots and everything like that, for the actual scenes where they're possibly using the one power, which is the magic scenes like we saw in episode one, that would work really well within the volume because that's basically, you know, you can have the actor, you know, moving their hands in coordination to what they're seeing, what the directors have already decided is all going to happen on screen beforehand.
And it's projecting real-time lighting effects.
Yeah, it would be cool. I wonder. I mean, Amazon can afford to go and create their own if they want, but, you know.
Absolutely.
I don't know how that would work, but, you know, it's studio space, isn't it? And currently there's only two out there, isn't there, that are really functioning at the moment, which is in Ellie and Pinewood. But we know that there is other ones. And
three more they're building, right?
Yeah,
two or three.
The one we heard about in Atlanta or something, that they were doing some tests for a university that, you know, so possibly that's technology that by the time they get later on in the series, maybe they would be able to employ. But at the moment, yeah, I get that.
I would finish off with this. Everyone online, of course, has a talk show radio host. I don't know if he originally coined the term, probably not, but the history of now and forget tomorrow. Everyone online is, Game of Thrones. I'm like, this isn't Game of Thrones, guys. Like, Martin didn't go for Tolkien style, and this is kind of Tolkien-like, you know?
I mean, probably it's somewhere in between. You'd actually be surprised that this gets a lot more Game of Thrones-like as it goes forward.
But right now, it's not.
But to begin with, it doesn't. It falls very much into that kind of traditional. That first book, and that's one of the reasons why the first book I wasn't particularly that impressed with. I thought it was an okay book, but, you know, I was like, how can they make this last for 14 books, you know, and this is the smallest one. I wasn't really seeing what was going to invest me for that long space of time. What I hadn't really realised at that point is I kind of almost felt, well, these characters have went through a journey, but really they had only took the first step of a journey, and there was far more kind of dramatic things to come along as time went by. And, you know, it's worth for those fans that, you know, compare it to Game of Thrones and saying that. One of the only reasons Game of Thrones actually got published was because of the recommendation that that was actually from Robert Jordan is the name I was trying to remember there. Robert Jordan, who's sadly not with us anymore, actually, you know, friended George R. R. Martin and put a recommendation. And there's actually in the first Game of Thrones book, there is a, you know, an acknowledgement from Robert Jordan saying, this is amazing, go read it, basically. And Martin was also a fan of Robert Jordan. And actually, what I think a lot of Game of Thrones was a lot of the style that Robert Jordan sort of pioneered, which had never been done in fantasy before, which was an ensemble kind of side of things. So all these characters that you're spending time with, I wouldn't ever say there's one or two main characters. There is about four or five main characters all the time, all the way through it, and various other points of view that we get to see more characters that will be introduced later on that are important characters as well. So it's very much told from different people's points of view. And Robert Jordan also employed a technique of an unreliable narrator. So when a character tells you something in the book, this is how it is, that doesn't necessarily mean that is how it is. That's how that character thinks it is, you know? And he used that technique. And George R. R. Martin uses that a lot in the way he constructed his story as well, that, you know, you don't necessarily should always believe what a character's telling you because they're telling you it from their point of view. Whereas that wasn't really the case when Tolkien's work was. He was almost like, he was Iluvatar himself and writing down this is what happened, or it was written from Frodo or sort of Sam's point of view, depending on where it went in the story. So there is similarities, actually, but certainly not, I don't think, to begin with. And where
even
where
less so show-wise
does go is that little bit darker at some times, you know, that where it almost gets into grimdark, you know, situation. Wheel of Time doesn't quite get that far. It almost touches the lines of it at times, far more than Tolkien's does, but it doesn't just quite slip over. It's somewhere in between, I would say, overall. So, yeah, people comparing it to Game of Thrones should really just give it a chance on its own merits, to be honest, and realise that this is actually one of the stories that inspired what became Game of Thrones in the first place.
And I think what, again, it's that history of now, and people are just thinking of the most recent
Game of Thrones was a
fantasy thing. Yeah. Exactly. But I will say this for people that may have looked at like the ratings for it and seen 16 plus, this is something, if my son was into it at 8-9 years old, I honestly think I would let him watch it. So far, what we've seen has not been too much sexual content. There's a man ass in the first episode. The violence is up there, so it's always up to parents on what they want to let their.
Thing is sometimes not that's the biggest. A lot of parents, so as it is
the gore, side of it, like the intestines that the Trollocs were eaten and stuff like that. that's where this thing is getting its 16 plus, is the violence and the gore right now. So if you are curious, if your kid can watch, you know, war movies and or fantasy violence, I think this is actually probably safe for them so far. I don't know what's going to happen later.
And then do that.
Violence-wise, that could, in fact, get ramped up going forward, potentially, and where we go, threats, you know, difficult adult situations, certainly. Mm-hmm. Sex-wise, no, I mean, the series does have sex in it. It's discussed, it happens, but it's never in a way where, you know, in Game of Thrones, where there's scenes that happen while people are having sex, you know, so they have conversations mm-hmm. while they're having sex, which says, you must have a sex scene. And mm-hmm. then the show very much played into that and put more sex scenes in than we're even in the books, you know, to begin with. So I don't, unless, you know, they decide to do it for shock value or something, which would be wrong, there really isn't any need for them to have anything more than, you know, people go to bed together and then you see them the next morning, which mm-hmm. I think basically happens in episode one anyway. You know, mm-hmm. you can tell that Rand and Egwene have got together, but we don't actually see the act take place itself.
Yeah, you don't need all of that. Like, I know with, like, Game of Thrones, there was no chance I'd ever let my son walk in while watching. With this, like, he kept popping out, and it's like, okay, this scene is safe, it's fine. With Game of Thrones, it would have been an immediate pause, always, because it's like, you never know. But with this, it definitely felt like he could be around for a little bit of it.
And I think that's smart for Amazon to do it, because it opens up. This isn't young adult written, but it is a young adult accessible story so mm-hmm. far. So I think Amazon's smart.
I would say definitely to watch as well compared to a book, because it's such a long book series that would put off a lot of young people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can't imagine your average 15 or 16-year-old mm-hmm. going, oh, a 14-book series, I'll start now, you know. As an adult, I'm a very fast reader, very, very fast. So I can fly through books, you know, really quickly. It doesn't daunt me too much. But as a kid, I remember struggling initially with Lord mm-hmm. of the Rings. And in comparison, I thought that was a huge book. But compared to a 14-book series, it's actually really small, you know. Yeah. So it's a very different experience. So I think this could open it up to that kind of younger audience, in all honesty, because I'd be quite happy for my son, who's 14, you know, to watch this. It's no more violent than other things that he's seen before. And as we said, the sex scenes are, I would say, done with families in mind so far. Nothing too drastic, so I'd be quite happy for him to watch it if he was interested.
Yeah.
Anything more absolutely. To say, guys, before we get any more kind of slightly different maybe points of view?
We're all set.
So from my point of view as a book fan, it's funny that you said you liked how it didn't take too much time at the start, because I think a lot of book fans felt it was really rushed at the start. because the time that they take from starting it to that winter night fight and then leaving the two rivers doesn't feel that we really spent much time with the characters before all this. It's like, quickly, let's just get them into where they need to be and get them on the road. And there were some things added in as well which weren't in the books, and to me, I didn't necessarily feel that they added any value. One of the things that has been a big bone of contention, and I wanted to ask you guys what you thought about this, is when Perrin kills his wife accidentally mm-hmm. in episode one. What did you think about that from your point of view as non-book readers?
Okay, well, for me, like, we've actually been through an experience like that.
I didn't kill anyone.
Yes. There was a time when my son was really young, and I think it was at the time when I had to get up twice in the middle of the night to give him medicine and feed him, because he had to have it, you know, the medicine on a full stomach. And I was just so tired and so frustrated. I threw a baby bottle cap at the window and caused the alarm to go off, and I was like, oh crap. So I run to go turn it off, and there's Kyle, and I'm like, no, it's fine. But, you know, he's got the training to see.
You've got to say, I'm pointing a gun at your face.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. And, you know, he's got the training to not, you know, to recognize who it is before you shoot, you know, military training.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm telling him, you know, no, it's fine. It's fine. He doesn't. So for him, he hears noises and she doesn't let him know that it's coming up. And I felt really bad for this couple because, you know, it's like we've kind of been there in our own, you know, interesting situation. And it's like, I could not imagine if me as a partner had done that to him, because I'm the one that doesn't have the training, and how much that would eat at me. But he doesn't have time to go through it, to grieve very much, because he's on the run.
They have to leave. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's like, I wonder, you know, what's going to happen further down the line and how much that's going to destroy him. Because I know it would destroy me. I would probably not be able to go with, be like, you know, I'm done, you know, like, whatever. So, you know, I'm wondering where that's going to go with that. And, you know, cause that's something that's so hard. You know,
yeah, it's you know, that's not something you're going to go over quickly, is it?
No. Yeah. So it's,
no.
Yeah. But
being overtaking, taking life thing, is difficult. Right?
That doesn't happen in the books. Perrin isn't even married in the books. He's a he's a blacksmith, but he's not even married. So this is something that they've added in. And it's something that I don't know if you know that the person who finished this book series is a man called Brandon Sanderson, who's an author in his own right, Mistborn, etc. When Robert Jordan passed away before he could finish the series, and his wife chose Brandon Sanderson to finish it, and he wrote the last three books of the series. So he's been a kind of, he's not been involved in terms of the writing of this series, but they ran things past him, you know, let's say. And the one thing he disagreed with about their decisions was this. He didn't think it was a good idea to do this, because his point of view, as you kind of said, Christine, is this is not something that you go over very quickly. So why bring such a dramatic event like that in at such an early stage of his development? Now, I don't know why they've done that. The only thing I can think of, it might be that they've not quite worked out how to deal with his character, because he's a very taciturn character, Perrin. You know, a lot of what you find out about Perrin in the books is in his head, you know, what he's thinking about and considering about the situations that are going on, but he isn't saying very much very often, and it comes across very standoffish and a bit like a gentle giant, if you like. So I wonder if this is their way for trying to kind of get round why he's so sort of taciturn and closed off at this point of the story. I don't know.
Yeah, but some people just have that kind of personality anyway, so there was no need for that. If they really wanted him to go through this trauma, you know, traumatize their character, it could have been like, you know, someone from the village come in and it be someone else instead of it being a spouse.
Yeah, rather than being as close as a wife. That's what I think as well, Christine. They could have did that and not have it, you know, it could just be someone he knew, someone that you saw them talking to at the bar. Like, you know, the night before or something like that, someone that said, how are you? And he's just like, oh, I'll see you tomorrow. You know, someone who you knew they had a friendship but wasn't, you know, super close would have, I think, worked better. Because what I worry about is whether they'll be able to properly pay all that off further down the line when it wasn't in the novels to begin with, if that makes sense. But, you know,
we'll
see. We can't say for certain that. I can't see how that would go. So overall, I didn't like the first episode all that much until we get to the battle on Winter Night, because I just felt that we didn't get enough time to spend with the characters. Them leaving the Two Rivers also felt really rushed to me. It's like they didn't even say bye-bye to anybody. You know, I wanted the parents to say, look, if you need to go, go. You know, if those Trollocs come here, we're done for. We can't fight against this. If they're truly after you, then you need to trust the Aes Sedai and go for it. However, after that, I really enjoyed it. To be honest, I really enjoyed it. I thought episode 2 was great. I thought episode 3 was good as well. So even as a book fan, well, there are some changes that I'm kind of why. I'm still on board and kind of hopeful that this can be a good series going forward.
Yeah, because, I mean, you don't want like a psycho situation where it's like too much of the original story, like the remake of the movie.
Yeah,
you can't do that. I mean, it just,
yeah,
books, because you spend so much time in characters' heads, you just can't do that in a visual mm-hmm. medium. So there's always going to be changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe too. Doesn't need to be quite as much. Like, so that scenario is one where we could say, well, why? You know, I understand, you know, but I don't get the reason why you made that change. But other than that, you know, you have to absolutely accept changes in these things.
I do have a question about sure. Matt's character. Mm-hmm. That's his name, right?
Matt. Yeah, Matt
is Corker. That? Yeah, is that accurate? Like, he had two sisters. His parents are pretty much
drunken,
shitty parents.
Shitty.
No.
That's not okay. No. Yeah, because I was so just like, God, this sucks.
He had sisters. He had a mum and dad, but they were pretty happy. You know, actually, his dad was pretty rich, and a horse trader. Right, so
that was accurate.
That Matt knows a lot about that kind of stuff, you know, horses and everything like that. And there wasn't any mention of any kind of relationship issues. But I think they're trying to, in some ways, explain a little bit about why Matt is the kind of way he is.
Yeah.
Which it's tough to say, but Matt becomes one of, I would say, the most popular characters in the fandom. Overall, by the time you get to the end, or get further into the, you know, the show, but that takes a bit of time to begin with. Matt goes through, which I won't, you know, that's going to happen, some difficult times, let's just say, I don't know why they've done it, but I'm prepared to kind of
put the difficult times pretty early.
So yeah. I do, and I guess I'll. After this point, we can do our ad and then carry on. But I think it's Sony, man. Sony is behind the production of this. They do not, guys. I'm sorry, but they do not believe that the audience is smart enough. So what Cam, I agree with Cam. They're trying to give these characters something that you can see on screen because you can't spend enough time in their brains on screen in a visual mm-hmm. medium to get the why they are the way they are. But just like Christine said, we all know that some people are just the way they are. There doesn't have to be trauma for you to be stoic and the strong, silent type. That could just be exactly who you are. Mm-hmm. But Sony Pictures has no faith in your ability to think, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry to tell you that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what
that
I think it is. I think Cam's on to
why. Carry on too far into the series. I hope things get better and they trust the audience more because, you know, let people. But then at the same time, you say that, Kel, at the same time, some of the reviews I've seen was, well, I didn't understand what was going on completely after 3 episodes. You're like, did you understand exactly what was going on in Game of Thrones after 3 episodes? Because I didn't. I'd never read the books. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a clue what was going on, but I just wanted to know what this world, you know, mm-hmm. I was intrigued to find out more. Do you know what's happening in Lord of the Rings after the first 20 minutes, half an hour, which mm-hmm. is the equivalent space of time? No, you don't. So,
I mean,
you know, I don't
we
think
got
it's a valid
basic gist of it.
Yeah,
there's a cycle. These people are potential hosts to this entity that can be used for good or bad, depending on who gets their hands on it. The last person to get their hands on it were the bad guys. So the good guys, so to speak, are out there trying to do their thing. But yeah.
That's interesting.
You ready
because, let's cover an advert and then we'll carry
on. There we go. All right, guys. Grow Generation, take it away.
Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. For all of your cultivation needs, Grow Generation has the right products, service and staff to make your grow successful. Go to www.growgeneration.com, where the pros go to grow.
All right, Cam, we're done, man. That's it. We're back.
Okay. So, just one of the things you were saying before the break there. Sorry, what were we talking about there before the break? My mind's actually went completely blank.
We were talking about having how they would put somebody through something just to get the you're hoping that they have faith in the audience going forward and don't have to over explain.
Oh yeah,
explain
that's
things.
What I was going to explain. That the book actually starts with a prologue,
mm-hmm.
Before you get to the first chapter when you meet all the characters that you just met in the first episode here, and they've dropped that completely. But I've heard that the original plan was to go a 10-episode first season and have a longer opening where maybe they were going to put that prologue back in. So I'll be interested to know. I won't describe what happens in that prologue because it does explain a little bit of some of the history. Mm-hmm. But it didn't make sense necessarily the first time you read it. You know, it wasn't until later on that you started to understand what it was all about. So maybe that they'll bring that in further down the line, I don't know. So I won't talk about that just in case they do bring it up. But it was just to let you know that there is a bit more information about that in the book.
Cool.
So let's quickly just grade each episode. So I'm just going to ask you one at a time to give our usual LRMonline.com. We use ABC grades. Mm-hmm. So Kyle, what would you give to episode one?
So episode one, as far as an introduction to everything, is good. It's above par. It's better than many properties out there. There's obviously some growing pains that comes along with anything. But I think for a good start, it's a solid B+, man. I had no issues with it. Like I said, the CGI, it is what it is. Mostly what I was catching, like I said, were like lighting effects and things like that. And then in some of the other episodes, some of the backgrounds. But I appreciated the practical effects. I appreciated practical blood. Practical intestines, ladies and gentlemen. I love practical gore. And the Trollocs. Trolligs or Trollocs?
Trollocs. So Trollocs.
OC. So okay. Trollocs. Got it. So the Trollocs, they're great looking. They're gruesome.
They're hairy.
I will say this though, as part of the PC master race, I had to turn off the motion blur and stuff because the winter battle, is that what you're calling it?
Winter night battle.
Winter night. Okay. Once the action picks up in there, if you're watching it on like a HDR TV or something that's got like filmmaker mode in it, and mm-hmm. it's adding all the things of how the directors want you to see the film, it does kind of get dark and shaky. But that also helps hide some of the effects. But I did a B+. So yeah,
I was gonna say
B. Okay.
A B,
yeah.
Yeah.
What about episode two? Christine, what did you rate that one as?
I'm going to go with maybe a B+.
Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely better than the first one. I'm still getting, it's like in between that B+, A-. It's getting good. You know, I'm learning a little more. You know, so it's, yeah.
Cool.
I'm gonna have to stick with the B+ score right now. There was no major issues with it. Again, you get to carry on, learn a little bit more. You get your interactions with the White Cloaks, which I'm definitely down to follow them some more. I really like the Questioner. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Yes. In this instance, yeah. That's the way they're classifying that character. But yeah, the Questioners, so the White Cloaks,
they're the Inquisition.
They're soldiers.
No one expects the
Inquisition. Exactly. They're the Inquisition. That is it. Exactly.
And I love the because there's always something I've said. I don't like liars, but whenever you have to tell a story, the more truth you can have, the better it is, because lies build up story points that you have to remember, right? And mm-hmm. if you can just tell the truth, but make sure that you're able to use that truth in such a way,
exactly,
you never have to
use as much
lie.
Truth as possible.
And
yeah.
I loved that scene where the Questioner and Moraine meet
yeah.
up, and she realizes, I can tell the truth. I'm playing this part of a woman that I got stabbed by this awful beast.
I need to seek a sister.
Exactly.
Carries on because of these three oafs. So, you know, these three oafs are very relevant to what happens in the rest of the plot. So Aes Sedai can't outright lie. But that doesn't mean you always know what they're saying is 100% the truth as well. And that's true of all Aes Sedai throughout the rest of it. And there are some other oaths as well. One strange thing that they kind of seem to omit from the oaths on this was they didn't say, or I think they said that you can use the One Power as a weapon if you're in a direct threat or a direct threat to your sisters or your warders. But they didn't say, or if you're a dark friend, right? So I don't know whether that's because, you know, I don't know. That's a strange one, you know, because I guess, well, I don't want to go into it too much, but we'll see how that one plays out. But I just wanted to point that out, that there's a slight change in the oaths in this compared to what they were in the books.
That's interesting that you point out, because Moraine at least makes a point in the episode that it's not just that they won't lie because it's an oath, but they actually can't.
They can't.
And I didn't know how far that goes in with, because there's other
imagine if you were trying to tell a lie, but literally and the words wouldn't come out of your mouth.
Exactly. And
kind of thing.
So I started to wonder, like you see in other magic fantasy settings, can darkness corrupt it to where you can lie, and so yeah, that was in the back of my mind. And when you just mentioned dark friend or whatever it's called,
just somebody that works for the bad guys,
right? I was curious as if there's almost like a Sith magic element to where it's corrupted. It's not exactly pure and full, but you can definitely use it as a weapon offensively. So we'll see.
I certainly can't make any comments on that side of things. So, I'm going to... what did you think of the third episode? Any change for the B-pluses, or did any of them go up or down?
I'm going to go with A-minus. Right. And I want to make sure. Nynaeve?
Nynaeve,
did I say it? Her little piece coming through. I find it a little frustrating that, you know, you've got these... They're bigger beasts, yet, you know, the Trollocs, you know, yet they're able to, these humans are able to hold their own on it. So it's like, it seems, you know, for some of them,
they
it's
are
like,
stupid though, you know, so they're not skilled creatures.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they're very barbaric, you know, so they're never going to win a sword fight against, for example, Lan, who you saw, who's Moraine's warder. You know, in the books, he could take down 10 Trollocs without having to think twice about it, you know.
Okay.
Because he's a skilled warrior, you know. But these people that are in the Two Rivers, you've got like a dagger or something. There was a few things online where people said, like, they expected a bit more carnage there because, you know, they didn't, you know, they shouldn't have been able to fight back on as well as that.
With her coming through, like, I thought that was really awesome, and I like how strong she is. I like that they brought her in. There was like a few things where it's not a higher rating because like Lan takes them into this ancient city, old city or whatever it is, and it's like,
it's
like, why did you make them stay there when you know that's not a good idea? You know, where he's like, don't eat anything from here.
In the books because Moraine is involved as well at that point. Okay. So she knows that as well. You know, they're all taking that risk together, if you like, rather than Moraine sort of not being able to be involved in that decision in the books. But I can see why they did it that way, though. It doesn't really make, you know, too much
difference. To me, it's like I would have just kept going, like, let's just hang out outside. If something happens, we can go in, but we're not staying in and trapping ourselves. Like, to me, it's like, I have no experience in this world, but yet I would make a better choice, you know? So there was like a few things where it was like, that doesn't quite work for me. Like, that doesn't make sense that he would make that decision because he should be more knowledgeable. But there was just some parts where it's like, it kept me on the edge of my seat. There's like, you know, Nynaeve coming back. I thought that was really awesome, and I'd love to see more of her. It was kind of disappointing, like, oh man, she's dead? That sucks.
Yeah.
But no, she's not. Okay, cool. So yeah, and then like with them splitting up, Nynaeve, it just kept it interesting.
She ends up one of my favorite. I didn't love her at first, but I ended up, you know, liking Nynaeve quite a bit actually as things went on. So, Kyle, you any change in the third one from the way you rate it?
Comparatively, I'd bump it up to an A- as well. The whole way that they have to get split up, the way what's her name escapes and shows up, and how that pays off in the third episode is great. The action is fun. It's very pretty looking. There are some CGI issues in there, but even then, you're just like, oh wow, you guys are doing a pretty bang up job, especially considering when this was filmed and other immediately before and during pandemic productions that have suffered greatly with their CGI. I was overall impressed. So if this is the first A- and it holds up, then I'm very very excited. Because even though like I you know. Episode 1 and 2 both get B pluses from me. Yeah, the second episode's a better B plus, if that makes sense.
Like, I get you.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm a little bit different. I was B minus for the first episode because I just felt the start was all a little bit clunky. And they tell things from... It's almost like they're telling the story from Moraine's point of view, whereas the books doesn't. So Moraine's more of this mysterious stranger, and I'm not sure that worked as well. But anyway, the second one was my favourite because that was Shudder Logoth. And I really, you know, like that because it gets into the darker elements of the kind of tale. And although there's not a lot of information given about, you know, you have Lan's little story about, you know, what happened, but there's more to it than that. This isn't Shudder Logoth's not one of those places where you're never going to go back there again. You never, it's never going to be mentioned again. You know, it does have some importance later on. So, so I really enjoyed that. I like the way, although they don't name it, the Mashadar, that black shit basically that's kind of eating up the pavements and coming towards them. That's not how I kind of imagined it in the books, but I liked how they did that. So for me, I kind of had that one as an A-, and then the third episode a B+, same as you guys, because I did enjoy that one. I thought it was kind of in between the two of them, and I enjoyed the whole dark friend thing which happened at the end of episode 3 with that girl.
I can't believe I got those freaking confused. That whole part there in that the third episode where I forgot about the town where Matt and Rand are at. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love that. I love the Gleeman. I can't believe I, sorry guys. We watched, one and then we watched 2 and 3 back to back.
It just feels like one back.
Exactly. So it did because it flows so quick in, and I'm trying to remember where the episode breaks are. But yeah, that whole bit there with the innkeeper, barkeep, the Gleeman, great way to introduce more lore. Great way to introduce, hey, there's not just people that are like occultists. There's opportunists here that are like, do you recall like what great things happened for the last person to do that? So I'm going to do it. It's very, very interesting. Great way to introduce humor and a much better way to explain, especially Matt versus, oh, he's got a shit parents.
I liked it because it's not, I don't think it's a direct tie to any specific thing that happened in the book. The book spends a lot of time with those two characters going from sort of village to village, and they meet a few bad people on the way who are interested in doing them harm, let's shall we say, or handing them in, etc. And of course they do meet Tom Merrillan along the way as well. At first I didn't like Tom when he comes in at first because of the music that he plays. Now you as a non-book reader won't have any reference for that,
right?
But a gleam in how they were described in the books was they would wear colourful cloaks and they would be doing juggling and dancing, telling poetry or using a harp and singing, you know, beautiful songs, and people were cheering and getting rowdy with it. And whereas that was a very sombre So they did do stuff like that as well, but I just hope that we get to see a more jovial side to him as well at times going forward.
It came off
but
more
after
like
that,
those.
I thought he was great though. You know, once he started speaking and the music was off, I loved everything about Tom Merrillen at that point. So,
am I off my rocker here when I heard them talking about they were singing some other song and they were like, "Do you understand the meaning of these words and stuff like that?"
You're talking about the Man of Theron song,
right? And then with the Gleeman's songs, I couldn't help but feel there's some sort of relation to those Gaelic like poem songs that are like very, very specific and handed down constant. You know what I'm talking about? It's
tradition. It's a society where gleemen are who, you know, they don't have a lot of way to pass. You know, it's a bit more advanced than sort of Middle Earth at this time in terms of technology. So people can read and write, you know, and not everyone, obviously, but it's not like Game of Thrones where nobody can, you know, read it. Right, you have to be a lord to be able to read and write. It's not like that. But, you know, you don't have access to books or anything unless you're in a big city. So they have these gleemen who tell the stories that happened at the age. And some of that's like where they just sit and tell a story. Some of it's, you know, something that they sing. And they talk about the dragon and what happened before and the breaking of the world and all the societies that have come up and then disappeared and, you know, the battles that have happened. And they talk about a lot of that history in the songs, you know, as they go through it. But as a book reader, they don't necessarily tell you all those songs. They just describe what he's singing about sometimes, you know, so it's not too in your face in the books where it's just somebody playing music all the time and telling you stories.
I can't pronounce Gaelic words or Irish or Scottish, however you guys
Gaelic's not even right in itself. Depends on where you come from, it could be Gaelic, you know. So.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but it's spelt P-I-O-B-A-I-R-E-A-C-H-D, and it's art music, primarily Scottish Highlands, extended compositions with melodic themes.
C-H-N, it'll be... or something.
There you go. Does that sound familiar? Am I on connecting it to that?
I've never learned. Although they do speak it in some parts of the country I live in, it's small northern parts of the country. You don't learn it in the southern part of Scotland at all. We, you know, southern central, which is where most people live. We don't even get taught it. So I remember as kids them having Gaelic TV shows on occasionally, you know, and I couldn't understand what they were
like,
saying.
Is it? Dingle? They speak it there in Ireland, in Dingle, I think it is, or Galway?
Galway.
Yeah, they're all of their stuff's in what they call
Irish. Irish Gaelic is different from Scottish Gaelic as well. They're different. It's not easy, you know.
But it was interesting because I also heard a lot of like bluegrass style music, which is inspired by traditional Scottish and Irish music, brought over to the United States.
You know,
exactly.
And remember,
it was interesting.
A world where all of that's been influenced and all done different things, and it's much further along. So in terms of how close we are to where this story is, which is the third age, if you imagine where we are just now is the first age. And there's seven ages, and we don't know much about what happens in the other ones or anything like that. But at some point, they have to go back round and start again. I won't talk about all the different things that happens in them, but our history is their myths and legends, if you like, at this point. But at the same time, some of what happens in their history becomes our even more warped myths and legends that come all the way back round again. So
it's very interesting. I'm scared to look up, and maybe Cam, you could do this since you aren't afraid of the spoilers, but I'm wondering how, if Jordan's books influenced Horizon Zero Dawn, because a lot of that is very, very similar.
I wouldn't figure anything about Wheel of Time. This goes for Andy that's listening and watching on here, because the way that Google just works with Wheel of Time is it's so easy to get spoiled. Like if you type in a character name, it will come up, you know. Now this isn't something that happens. When when Billy loses his head in episode, do you know what I mean? And that's literally how they put it on Google, you know? And there is things like characters possibly losing parts of themselves or characters dying, you know, that they will just spoil right out the blue. So do be careful of Googling that. But
the reason I bring that up is they also have a cataclysmic event in which a matriarchal society does kind of pick up, but there's also splinter factions that aren't matriarchal that are, you know, there's a follower of Hades, so to speak, and the followers of the mother, you know, and then you go on this, it's both post-apocalyptic but also set in the past, so to speak, but there's all these ruins and legends from people searching the world that they're in Horizon. So of course, it's a completely different thing.
It's a cyclic, kind of standard fantasy trope, though. They say for most fantasies, what you should have is at least two ages that came before you, because it allows for that historic and finding things out, things that were forgotten thousands of years ago that come back, and you know. So it's a common thing to do that in most fantasies. So it could just be. Yeah, it could just be that they're taking that standard way of doing it, but a game. I don't know.
Maybe.
Okay, we're going to do the quick fire round now, where I'm going to ask you guys some questions and get some theories and stuff like that. So the first one I'm going to ask is not really theory related, but it's just any characters you really like, who's your favourite character so far, and is there anybody you actually dislike or don't care for so far? So, Kyle, you can go first this time. Anybody you like or dislike?
I like Matt. Already, I always kind of like the rogues, the diamond in a rough character, if you will, and that's how he's kind of portrayed here. And then I'm very, very interested in the relationship between the warders and the Aes Sedai, their sisters that they're protecting. So that's cool. I don't think there's anyone I don't like. I don't think there's a character that I absolutely hate. Rand just kind of seems like, so far, your standard issue potential lead. But then again, like I said, they have done a decent job at showing that there's more to the others. But I don't think there's anyone right now that I'm just like, don't get on screen again.
Christine, any changes to that? Who did you like? Anybody that you disliked so far?
Nynaeve, I liked the best because of episode 3. Like, I really liked her in the first episode. You know, strong, mature. And then, of course, like, you know, she appears again, and then it just that time with her, getting to know her a little more. I really like her. With the 4, there's just like the flaws where it's like, you're okay. Yeah. Especially with Matt, like, it's like, you're my least favorite, but we're still okay. So yeah, like, there's just, you know, they're young. There's certain things that, you know, they haven't lived, they haven't learned, they, you know, the mistakes being made, like with, Rand and, Egwene, where it's like, it's obvious she's made her choice in the first episode. And it's like, you could have just said something. And then, like, with Rand, it's like, he knows, but he's still wanting her to give the answer of, like, you know, don't pick this route, pick me. Yeah. So it's just some of those where it's like, that's kind of annoying, but they're young, so I'm gonna give them a pass on that. So, but yeah, I definitely like...
Young, dumb, and what?
Yeah,
Nynaeve is my favorite so far.
Cool. I'm not really going to comment at the moment, because my most recent experience with these characters is where they are at, you know, or some of them anyway, at the end of the story. So it's really hard to go back and remember what I thought of them at the start of the story just now. So I'm just kind of everything's okay. I'll just wait and see how this pans out. One thing interesting that you mentioned, you like Matt, and Kristen, you said you weren't so sure about Matt yet. He's actually been recast for season 2 already. So Barney Harris, it's a bit mysterious. We don't know why, but Barney Harris is not in season 2. No one's mentioned the reason why. They've just said officially, he's recast as I can't remember the guy's name. At the moment, it's been recast into the role, and they've said it'll be seamless the way he just kind of takes over that role from season two onwards.
Rhodey.
But again, I think they might even do something daft like that just to kind of carry it on. But we don't know why. So we don't know if it's a bad reason or health reasons or personal reasons, and you know. So there's no point in speculating on that. But it is what it is. And that's the only thing that I kind of disappoints me a little bit, because when I see Barney Harris there, I think he did a good job. You know, of where I expect Matt to be at kind of this point in his journey.
And there's room to grow and stuff. So that I didn't know that they were going to recast him. Like, again, like I said, I do not touch the news on this. I want it as fresh as possible. Yeah. You're good. I mean, I get you a little bit, but, you know, there's still some things that are annoying. You're, you know, kind of like a little selfish. You know, there's some things like, it's like,
absolutely,
you're pickpocketing, you're gambling, like, you suck at gambling. Why did you gamble? Because now you have nothing and you were needing that money. So it's just some of the choices. Again, youth, you know, we've made mistakes.
Smiling and grinning, it's just because I'm thinking a million things about what you see and I can't say anything about it.
Okay.
that might be the funnest part of this podcast is the super fans like yourself reading the book, looking at two, you know, casual noobs like, ha ha, you guys.
I mean, since I read the books, I've went into all the theories and all that, because not everything's explained in the books, you know, so there's a lot of things to discuss even after you've finished them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm certainly a fan, I'll say that. Maybe not quite super fun, but some of the questions I was going to ask you are things that you've actually covered in the way that you've been talking about it anyway, weirdly. So I'll get on to some more specific stuff. Because I was going to ask you, one of the things I was going to kind of ask you about was, you know, theories and why women can only use the one power. You kind of covered already some stuff in that already. And I also wanted to ask a little bit about Rand and Egwene. Will they stick together? Will they be right? I mean, Christine can already pick that up and she's not sure about that. So I'll ask you something a bit more straightforward since we're coming to the end of this episode. Who's the dragon reborn? Theories. Who is the dragon reborn?
Because it's like they've put a lot of focus on Rand. So it's kind of like, I'm wondering if it's you or if you're tricking me, where it's like, let me just cover the romance part of this. And it's like, it's not really you. So it's like, it's a maybe. I haven't like picked one like, yep, it's you. At first I did, but then I was like, you know what? You're probably messing with my brain. So I'm going to just lean toward Rand.
Leaning towards Rand at the moment. What about you, Kale? Same or?
Question. Out of the four,
mm-hmm,
are any of them different genders than they were in the book?
No.
Okay.
No. I meant to see that because at first they were kind of promoting it as five, but did you spot how they worked out it's only between four now and Nynaeve isn't really a contender anymore?
I mean, part of it was
with Moraine, she's too old.
Mm-hmm.
She's too old. She's about 25, 26, so she's not young enough to be, as far as Moraine's information is, whereas the other ones are all the same age.
Too old to begin the training.
Too old you are! What do you think? Pick it. You've got to give it.
So, if that's the case, I don't think it's the girl that can actually touch magic as of right now, and I don't think it's going to end up being Rand. If I was a betting man, I'd put it on the guy that is the stoic, the one that probably doesn't want it at all. I'd put it on him because it seems like the type of character that would not want the burden, but once it's thrust upon them, would rise to the occasion. Mm. While Rand is kind of like the obvious choice, and Matt is the one that you want it to be, because you're like, man, that's kind of like self-insertion there. But yeah, if I'm going to go with anyone, it's going to be
I don't know. Once you find out a little bit more, it's not exactly somebody catching a good break. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, like I said, he doesn't want actually, it, but he'll rise to the occasion.
In the books, I knew, and most readers will know, who the Dragon Reborn is by like chapter two, right? It's not really hidden in the books because of the way they're written. The characters do not know, though. That's the point. The characters don't know, but you as the reader are already
doing that for us.
Inside, you know, kind of thing. So they seem to be making a more of a mystery out of it than what it was in the books. But I think you will know the answer to that by the end of this season, is my guess. I don't think that's a mystery that they're going to carry forward. I just don't see how they could. So I expect that you'll have that answer by the end of the season. Next question. Maureen, are her intentions good? Or, like, Rand had some concerns about her, you know, overall intentions. Do you side with that, or is she actually helping them?
I don't know, because she feels like a gray character. You know, she doesn't... I don't quite know. I'm still trying to feel her out. It's not negative, but it's like... I don't really know. Because, again, it's like, it's really confusing. Like, what are you doing, girl? I don't know.
I think she's a true believer, and in her mind, it's all for the greater good. I believe she herself is a good character.
Yeah.
But you can definitely see, because power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, and you can see that there's some Aes Sedai that are a little bit more aggressive, maybe happy to be aggressive, but I think she's overall good. Gray is a good, you know, description, but more gray because of what the organization is versus gray because of her. That's what I'm feeling.
Cool. What two more questions for you. What's with the wolves? What's going on with the wolves?
I think they're helping. It was kind of strange seeing, like, you know, what's his name?
Perrin were the ones that were, Perrin's the one where I licked his leg.
Exactly. Where it's like, it's not bad. And it's like, even when they were behind them, I already knew, it's like, they're pushing you towards something, you know, they're trying to help, not hurt. So it's like, I wasn't worried, especially after that, the scene where one of them licked the wound.
So you never felt them as being a genuine threat to the two of them? No.
So this is part of why I think it is Perrin.
It was one of the reasons you're connecting that together.
Right. I don't know necessarily that the wolves are from a benevolent source. They're definitely there to assist in a way, but I think there's a potential that they're coming from the dark. And like you said, being led, protected, healed even by, you know, licking the wound or something. They don't show if that actually healed them up, but I have a feeling that there's an ulterior motive. Someone's behind the wolves, and I don't necessarily think they're good, but we'll see. But
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know, because to me, it's just like, you know. You know, wolves are very smart animals, but, you know, like when you see in a lot of fiction, you know, they're painted in a negative light, and it's like, I'm hoping they're not going to go that route.
Fantasy has wolf riders in so many things, and it's always it's like, that bad guys riding them.
Yeah, so as to me, it's like, I'm hoping that...
Well, we just have to... with the books, you would say read and find out. With the show, it's just going to have to be watch and find out, unfortunately. All right, last question. Any theories on what's going on with the dreams? So far, you know, they all had the same dream, you know, and they make that quite clear, and it had something to do with bats. Yeah, but we only really see it from Rand's point of view, but there was also a figure scene that had kind of fired the eyes. Any theories at this point about what's going on with the dreams or not? I mean, if you just nap, we don't know something, but we don't know, that's fine.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of strange that they're all... There can be only one, but it's like all four of them are somehow connected in this, and it's really strange. And yeah, I can't put my finger on anything right now. I'm gonna have to wait, because right That's now fine. It's just a giant question mark.
That's fine.
Definitely get some from the fades. You get a ring wraith feeling, but it looks like Tom Riddle from Harry Potter and a ring wraith got it on, and the fades are their kids here in the show.
It's the format, but yeah.
So I've got in my mind, again, just relating to other fantasy properties and even science fiction, to where I don't necessarily think the figure with the red eyes is the big bad,
right.
But maybe a lieutenant, you know, a right-hand man or something, you know, like that. Yeah, exactly.
The bad guy, but not the top dog, basically.
Exactly. And we're looking at, again, like I point to the wolves as potentially influence from there, because we've already seen some positive influence, so to speak, from Moraine and Lan. Is that his name?
Lan.
And
yeah.
Then yep. And so that's what I'm kind of feeling there, is we're looking at, you know, someone in the court of the dark.
I don't know, because you said that you know, the Wheel of Time came before Game of Thrones, and
the
dire wolves aren't negative, they're animals.
True.
So to me, that's why I'm like, I'm hoping it's not a negative
existed.
Thing.
So I think what you know, they don't exist anymore, but they were a larger, you know, species of wolf that was alive in, you know, previous times, and I think pretty much hunted to extinction by humans when we arrived. So I think that was Martin taking a real thing, but saying that it still exists and kind of that world kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, you know, it came afterwards, but yeah, I won't say anything. I just won't say anything. That's probably
Cam's regretting you and not doing it because it's too analytical. No, I'm joking.
If I did this with someone who was, you know, who was also reading the books, it would be a completely different conversation, because we'd be, you just have to take it to the point of view, right? Spoilers for books are allowed here. This is for book fans. And there's a million podcasts out there that are already for the book fans and people who know far more about the series than I do. And what we're kind of trying to provide is something that people can listen to your theories and watch along with you and find this story from the visual medium for the first time, rather than kind of having to explore the books themselves. So.
Yeah, we never even talked about, now that I'm thinking about it, we haven't talked about I don't even remember what the name of the group is. They're like gypsies.
Ah, the Tinkers. The Tinkers.
The Tinkers.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
They're like gypsies.
Yeah, I'm wanting to see more
Irish
of them.
Irish travellers, if you like, would be a big influence for them, but they very much have their own, you know, they're very different thing. But I guess we will get to talk about them more, I think, a little bit next week, because I think we're going to spend a bit of time possibly next week with Perrin and Egwene, who are currently with those people. So
yeah.
We can probably talk about it.
I like the part where they ask them to, you know, do you know the song? And I'm guessing because he had a female that looks like she could be of a certain age, or want to make sure lies is potential, but also Moraine uses a phrase in one of the episodes, words have power, like they mean something. So the fact that they offered them the chance to, hey, here's the important part, can you say this part, I wondered, are they checking if someone can lie or not, and but I also wonder what else the song could mean.
I can't see anything, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not looking to you say anything, I'm just trying to read your poker face.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the stuff that you're talking about is things that you'll at least get some kind of answers for. I won't say you'll get, even by the end of all 8 seasons, if it goes to 8 seasons, that every question will be answered, because Robert Jordan didn't answer every question. And even there were some things that he left for the writer, Brandon Sanderson, who finished it off. And although he wrote them, he didn't know necessarily, he didn't have the answer to what they all meant. So there are some mysteries that died with even Robert Jordan, deliberately so, because he felt that not everything had to be explained within the story. So
there is one ultimate answer to all of that, though, to life, the universe, and everything. It's 42, so whatever we don't find out, it's just 42, guys.
Yep. So We'll wrap it up there, guys. So thanks very much for everyone that listened in. We'll be covering each episode. Obviously, this one ran a bit longer because we had three episodes to cover, a lot to talk about. But going forward, we will only be talking about one episode a week, so it'll probably be slightly shorter, where we kind of review it, give our grades, and then get into some any more theories or changes to any theories that anyone has as we go along. And thanks, everyone, for listening, as I said, or watching, wherever you find your podcasts or YouTube channels. Kyle, Christine, anything you guys want to say before we wrap up?
Check out, if you guys are into anime, we are doing a seasonal anime. I mentioned that at the beginning on AVR Anime Versal Reviews, Mariko-chan. If you are into horror and creepy stuff, this is a really cool show. So check out our episodes 1-7 review up right now, and then join us every Sunday for the weekly episodes.
All right.
I got nothing.
Great. All right. Well, I'll see you two again next week
Okay.
for
great.
More The Dragon Review. Thanks very much, everyone. Bye.